I think that probably all of us are aware of the fact that in the United States we depend very heavily on the news media to keep us informed about what's going on in public life, and in many ways to act not only as reporters but also to caution us about trends. We think that news can be handled by reporting and also by editorial work. And we like to think that there's a difference between those two things, just the facts, ma'am, on one side, and the opinion of the producer identified as such on the other. Now, the notion that the production and distribution of news is important is obviously not new. At the time that the United States became a nation, our Constitution was adopted. Simultaneously, as you all know, we adopted the Bill of Rights, first 10 so-called amendments, but they were in place at the time that the Constitution was adopted. And the very first one of those was, of course, the amendment to our federal Constitution, which says that Congress shall make no law which abridges freedom of speech. And if there has been one consistent thread since that time, it's been that the Supreme Court has insisted upon broadening and expanding that protection which is given to the freedom for distributing information, and the protection which is given to our public media, sometimes to the place where it becomes almost unpleasant, even to me as a lawyer, to see the kinds of protections that freedom of speech provides. Certain forms of expression that one might think, for example, of obscenity. This is indicative of the feeling that our court has that it must, if it err on the side of protecting, maintaining the freedom of the media to do its work for us. Now, there are very few other kinds of legal protections that are available, really. There are laws dealing with slander and libel, and if someone deliberately harms somebody else by wrongful reporting an action in slander or written material, libel will lie. And that is a sort of a very mild kind of a threat to news media, that they must not purposefully damage another person's by misrepresentation. However, as you probably know, in recent years, the United States Supreme Court has exempted out from our libel laws a comment about practically all kinds of public persons, politicians, public officials, public employees, the notion of fair comment. And fair comment goes so far that there really is very little that you can't say about somebody else, as long as you have any basis for making the statement. So, what's left by way of possible protection? Ethics. And that's why we've chosen in this panel, this forum this evening, to talk about ethics in the media, the news media. Now, it might be good just to very quickly say what ethics might mean. Ethics, I suppose, at least to me, indicates some kind of agreed upon principles or rules about behavior for a given group of people. Most identifiable vocations or professions would have some kind of ethics. Sometimes they're formalized. In my own profession, the canons of professional ethics are well known and documented. Trust a lawyer to do that kind of thing. I'm sure that in the news arena, there is also an ethical sense. And that's what we're trying to get at this evening. What will it permit and what won't it permit? Now, those ethical standards are not necessarily official law of any sort. They are rather understood, agreed upon, sort of semi-formalized, and respected by the people in the profession if they're to do their job. So it would seem to me that we might talk tonight a little bit about the notion of how do those ethics get formed? Are they good enough? Could we have a contribution to the news media in terms of what we expect as a contribution to the formulation of their ethics? Well, it's general background, and I think Arnie has some illustrative material on how this problem might shape up, and then I guess maybe Dave can give us a reaction and we go to work.
During the past little over 12 and a half years, I've been in a few meetings that have ended up being reported in the press in various kinds of ways. Also had some specific relationships to people who have been written about in different ways. I'd like to highlight a couple of those just as illustrations of what may be use or misuse of the press that Dave might want to respond to. But a couple things before I do that. One, I agree with Vern that we, and the fact that we have the amendment to the Constitution that allows for free press, I think we need a free press. I think we need a responsible press. I think we need an objective and a balanced press. I have noticed in dealing with groups of people who have been informed by some press stories prior to my meeting with them about the same topic, that it seems to me that people tend to believe anything they read in the paper as sort of gospel. It's printed, therefore it must be true. And also, readers tend to believe that which is printed and is negative about something or somebody more than they tend to believe that which is positive. They also tend to form their opinions, oftentimes, on the basis of headlines. And they don't read the fine print that explanatory story that the reporter has written, and I understand that there is a headline writer on large papers and they are different than the reporters, and therefore there are two different people involved. So just a couple of those things. Let me tell you about a couple of instances and then Dave may respond. We have an office of research and analysis in the American Lutheran Church. They do papers, they do research, they develop study papers, and in the process of the formulation of papers, their drafts become available to the church and therefore to the press, and the press oftentimes will pick up these drafts of papers in the formulation stage and write a story. And maybe the last paragraph identifies it as a draft of a statement being worked on, without saying that it's being distributed, responses will be coming back, and so on. Well, I went to a congregational meeting one time where they had some questions about the American Lutheran Church, and in the process of the meeting, one particular person said, "What about this story?" And they waved the paper. Or what about this statement of the American Lutheran Church? And he waved the paper. I said, "What statement are you talking about? I hadn't seen the paper." "Well, it's this one in the paper." I said, "I haven't seen the paper. Let me, may I look at it?" "No, you can't look at the paper." "But it's true. It's there and everything." Well, that was his reaction. But he was asking questions about it and objecting to the draft of a paper that was in formation. But he hadn't understood the story to be that. It was rather now a firm position of the American Lutheran Church to which he objected. And so we had an interesting discussion, first of all, establishing the basis on which we could talk about what he was objecting to, because of the way the press had reported something. So I had that kind of problem. In another instance, a small group of people met in what they called a convention, and had some some things to say, in this case again, about the American Lutheran Church. And it was reported by the news reporter, who happens to be a friend of mine. He reported the story, and he had, you know, highlighted the things they were saying negatively about some things in the American Lutheran Church. Cited that this, the name of the organization was meeting in convention, national convention, and left it there. Well, I called him up and I said, you know, there seems to me there was something very important that you left out of that story. You didn't say that that was a convention of 70 people who represented only themselves, and they were saying these things about the American Lutheran Church. The implication of your story was that it was a national organization, therefore very large. They represented a large group of congregations in America. He acknowledged that that was a deficiency in the story, but that didn't change the fact that it had been reported. A third example, and then Dave, it's all yours. The St. Olaf College Board of Regents met about 2 weeks ago now, and the newspaper reported that meeting. There were two paragraphs in their report, and there was a headline. The first paragraph, which was the longest, said that the Board of Regents had decided, despite the urging of the student, of some students, not to sell liquor on campus. The second paragraph, much smaller in the end, was that the president of St. Olaf, Sidney Rand, had announced at the board meeting that he would not fill out his full term but would retire 1 year early. Seemed to me, and the headline was about the decision about liquor, nothing about Rand. Seemed to me that the person reporting that story had objectively selected out that which might have been most controversial and reported it, but the implication was that Rand was leaving early because he didn't want to be around to sort of have to worry about the student objection to the fact they weren't going to sell liquor on campus. And therefore, 17 years or so of his presidency, which would now be coming to an end next year, was sort of not recognized and in the announcement of his resignation. Seemed to me that the papers could have handled those things better.
It's very difficult for me to respond specifically to any of those items. And it would be very difficult for me to talk about the subject in other than rather general terms. But I think there are a number of points that I'm going to have to bring up. And I think at least one is that I suspect if we took a vote of the audience here this evening, we would find a good portion of them at some time in the past year or so have doubted what they read in the newspaper or see on television as being the whole truth or the truth. Secondly, I hope you realize that if you watch just an evening newscast on television or read only one newspaper, and I have to use that rather loosely, you're not getting the whole story. That in order to understand situations, and this is not going to refer at all to the American Lutheran Church, which I know very little about, but to understand stories that are developing in such countries as Lebanon, Rhodesia, South Africa, Nicaragua, a number of countries in Latin America, you're going to have to do much more reading and much more watching than what you will see right on television or in your newspaper. For example, I could at best interfere and say that in the last year I've read, I believe, every newspaper article in the country in Nicaragua that Christian Science Monitor has written. So I feel like I know at least one particular story from one particular news event that has a lot of background and a lot of depth to it. And I know that fairly well. Now, what that means is that in order to understand anything, we need to go beyond just what we might get locally. And it also means that to understand a story like that, there must be some background material written, and that leads into the nebulous area of interpretation of news events. Thirdly, perhaps I've already covered it, what you see on television it only gives you a very glossed over picture of what the event is. That we must go farther than just the 30-minute newscast that perhaps Walter Cronkite puts on the air as being adequate. In newspaper reporting, I'm sure every news reporter has had stories cut before he ever gets the important part in, and that may be it may relate to some of your experience. It may also be due to the fact that certain stories that develop during the day, certain news events, will have a larger play in a newspaper, on a television program, or in a radio newscast than a large number of other stories. Now, as far as the retirement of the president after 17 years, I would suggest that the local newspaper, I'm sure, will give much larger coverage to that as the event comes about. As far as ethics go, I'm not sure I can comment directly on that, but it seems to me that when Watergate started, there became a lot more coverage in the interpretation of news, if we can call it that, than perhaps in any other time in recent American history. Although I suspect that interpretation of news stories has been going on a lot longer than we really are able to.
Teapot Dome.
Oh, yes. And so forth and so on. I'm sure we can all name individual news stories in which one, there would require a certain amount of background and a certain amount of interpretation of the events. And I'm sure we could all name stories or events that we feel individually here were not covered adequately or perhaps even covered that we would do wrongfully. But those are rather general statements, and I hope that covers what both you said.
Maybe what we've said is enough to get people started talking and sharing their own views, opinions, which is the purpose of the forum in the first place.
Well, let me add one thing first. When I mentioned that I had read every article with Christian Science Monitor and had written about the country of Nicaragua, that may have resulted from some discussions that were held here last summer and got me thinking about that. But in just reading one story or one major news event throughout a year, you pretty much have a very narrow focus area, so that everything else is, you know, very confused, or I know very little about anything else almost.
Arnie, Dave raised a fascinating Ed Schramm type digression. Excuse me, Ed, wherever you are.
Right here. Okay.
And with your permission, I'd like just to test that with audience reaction. The problem is, do you believe the newspapers or do you believe other people? Huh? Hypothetical question for you. Suppose that there was a rumor around that the United States, by a warship, had just sunk a Vietnamese vessel, and the President of the United States himself appeared on television and said, "We did not shoot that ship." And that 20 minutes later, Cronkite was on the television and he said, "Despite what the President has said, I have good information that the United States shelled that ship." Now, how many of you would believe the president? How many of you would believe Cronkite? I guess most of you would not believe either.
Being completely confused by the whole issue.
And wait for a later word.
And that's, of course, one of the problems is reporting events right as they happen.
Yeah. Bill?
Well, I only want to comment. In the last few years, I think the credibility of news media as well as government has slipped considerably. I've reached a point where I don't believe unless I see it, and then I'm not so sure about that. But and particularly as far as any quotation by a news media of what the government does, I think we've reached a sorry state of affairs in our country where we can no longer feel the 100% confidence in our government and what it puts out and the kind of manipulation it does, e.g. Gas shortages, this kind of stuff. And you get so you raise the question, well, who are you going to believe? You become quite cynical. I think that seems to be, at least from what I can understand, it seems to be a sort of a growing thing as far as American public is concerned. This gas shortage is considered by a great many people just another ripoff.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is that our news is very much managed. The oil companies try to manage the news and are reasonably successful. I think our government tries to manage the news and is reasonably successful. And as far as the reporters are concerned, they know where the bread is buttered. If the management is on a certain side, his reporters are better right on that side or they'll be out of the job. So by and large, that's the way it works. I'm not saying it works that way every time. So can we really trust a reporter to tell us the full truth? I'm not saying they lie, but they withhold things that maybe should have been in the story that would enable us to form a much better opinion. And I call this slanted news. And I think the Fed is off with a lot of slanted news. And still, these people still think they're ethical. And my definition of ethics doesn't quite agree with that situation.
when you have a code of ethics, what's involved in that? You say lawyers have a code of ethics. Is that a positive or a negative type of thing?
It happens in the legal profession that in most states it's actually statutory law enacted by the legislature, and if they can catch you, Charlotte, you can be disbarred. In most professions, I think it is not statutory. It's not positive law.
I know in the ALC, the district presidents are suggesting some codes of conduct for clergy.
Would you want to see that kind of thing in the news media? You know, if somebody, because if you could show that he reported the news wrong, if you could get rid of it?
Well, this is what I'm kind of getting around to, you know. What kinds of codes of ethics should we maybe have for the news media, or should we have codes of ethics? Would that be a good idea if it's shown?
Does news have such things that might not be public, but at least within the profession?
To the best of my knowledge, and this is just general, I would say that your three major networks, news departments, have codes of ethics. If you can label it that, I don't know what they would call it. But I'm sure that they would have. In fact, when Daniel Shore was fired from one network because he was found in conviction of, I believe by federal court, of releasing classified documents that he had that he had gained or passed on to someone else. I do not recall all the details. But so maybe that's one instance in which the code of ethics worked. But of course, there's a whole country full of small independent or small stations throughout the nation that, I don't know how they work. I only have very limited experience in that anyway.
Do we happen to have anybody here who's gone through a course in journalism or something of that sort?
That's why Betty didn't come.
Oh. Would be interesting to know if that's taught. Do you happen to know, Dave? I don't know.
I would say yes in journalism schools, such as at the University of Washington. There are courses of ethics in the law or ethics in the profession.
May I ask a question there? The Constitution of the United States says that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are supreme, that no one has the right to do anything that contradicts or violates those principles. And still, we have a Congress that makes laws that will permit the violation of those principles. My wife and I had a plan to go down to Washington, D.C., or down to in the East. We take a plane and go down to a church convention. But we couldn't go because there was a strike. Now, that interfered with my life of liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And you look in the papers and you find stories that thousands of children are denied the pursuit of happiness, parents of them, because of their interference. Because the law says that there are certain individuals that have a right to violate the Constitution. But it is a new breed in Congress.
What about the pursuit of happiness of people that were on strike? Some, you know, they were pursuing their happiness too, and their liberty and their life.
Oh, Vern, that's in the realm of law.
you're very close. It happens, though, that our Constitution doesn't say that. That's in our Declaration of Independence. When we were going around telling each other what we were going to do when we became a nation, we said that we would provide that nobody would be deprived of these certain God-given rights, huh? And then when we got around to writing the spinach, you know, how we're going to do it, we backed off. And you won't find that language in the Constitution of the United States.
It wasn't originally pursuit of happiness, it was something about property.
That's right. And we were, and the French people tried the same thing, and they have the same experience. You know, when you try to guarantee those things, when you get right down to it, how are you going to put that in language? And what are you going to do about it, you see? And the drafters of our Constitution, I think they did a magnificent job, backed away from that, and instead they gave us certain very specific protections. And they began to list them, first in the Constitution and then in the Bill of Rights. And when they came down to these things, the best they could do was to try and set up certain protections in which we could operate then and hopefully treat each other fairly. And as I mentioned before, and I never do manage to make myself very clear, the first one they thought of was, if you really want to be protected from having people leaning on you in secret, nobody knowing about it, you've got to give the news media, and you must permit people to talk publicly, and even though sometimes they're going to rattle over and say things that aren't true. You've just got to bend over backwards to keep those channels of communication open. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to sit here and talk about labor unions or management or the president or the newspapers. And so they gave this very heavy protection to freedom of speech, freedom of news. And as soon as you do that, well, you've got some people who can just abuse this terribly if they want to. You know, a newspaper can kill you. I mean, economically or socially, just ruin your reputation. And they're almost immune from discipline. And the whole history of the United States has been, that's a heavy price to pay, but it's better than having them shut up, because they're so terribly important to us. And what's left then? Well, a sense of decency that those guys ought to have.
One other thing that's left, I think, Vern, is the responsibility of every individual to try to ascertain the truth, even given slanted points of view. I come from a state where every newspaper in the state but one happens to belong to a certain political party. And you can know in that state that most news that you get is that political party's point of view. It's frustrating.
In the other party.
When you're in the other party, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. When you're in the other party, it's frustrating. I think it's also unfair to the other party, because we do believe in this balance, creating a good thing, and truth, if you will. But what it does is put a lot of responsibility on the individuals in that state to try to get two sides of the story somehow.
McAfee Brown said it rather clearly, we hear only what we want to hear, so Democrats only want to read Democratic papers.
And what it comes back to is the humanness of the people who own newspapers, and the humanness of reporters, and some people abuse that.
You mentioned slanted news, and I'd like to try to give an illustration of evidence, and then see if Dave wants to comment on it. The pressures on the reporters, if that is in fact true.
You'll have to speak a little louder, or the people here won't be able to hear you.
That's very true. I'll sit up straighter and speak louder. Thank you. I want to pick up on the slanted news that was talked about, and I have personal acquaintance with a particular story that was recently published, and I know that the reporter, and he was picking up on this investigative kind of stuff, and in effect creating a story. And I'm aware, because I have talked to some people that he talked to, who gave some very positive input to his story, which he did not report. He chose not to do that, and the slant of the story was negative, and he would use, without straining the truth, he would selectively report what he learned in the negative aspect and select out the positive ones and omit them and write up a story in that way. And I guess that would be slanting the news and picking up on this investigative kind of stuff, where they go out and in effect create their own story rather than have an event to report. The question I want to get to, Dave, where you mentioned you feel there's more investigative reporting now. Do you think that prestige gained by the reporters of Watergate and maybe the resulting remuneration that might come to good investigative reporters as a result of that has really tilted things towards investigative reporting rather than straight news reporting today? And to what extent does that create news and give the reporter the chance to really go off in the direction he would like to go off in and make some judgments that he reports to the public that maybe are only his own? Why did you look at me like that?
I suppose there would be some prestige gain for the reporter after the event is reported, or after their investigation is completed and the stories or series of stories is reported. I suppose there would be some prestige, as it would be in almost any line of work. I don't know about the enumeration. I would doubt that someone would gain extra pay for doing a particular job in that sense that you're thinking of it. I think there needs to be a little difference between interpretation of news events, such as someone's interpretation of a president's speech, which may entail only doing an outline form what the president had already said, such as the energy story that the president speaks to the end, that the president made in, I believe it was July. I think there's a difference between interpreting something like that and doing an investigative story, and unfortunately the only one that comes to mind immediately is Watergate. And I don't really want to mention that. But because of the events that followed after that and however long it took to eventually come to the root of the cover-up. I think there is a need for investigative reporting, particularly when it comes to enumerating the wrongs of a certain governmental agency, such as that which was reported in the past year about the GAO and their misappropriation of funds. Now, is that covered enough, or?
I was just tossing something out, thinking it might generate something more.
Yes?
Well, I think it boils down to that we American people don't really believe anything we read or see anymore. And it's our freedom to seek that and search it out ourselves. And if we are too lazy to do it, then that's our loss. And I really don't think we can put the thumb on the recorder. I mean, we all know what's planted. In my own town, I definitely feel our newspaper is planted. There's a certain one in Seattle that I believe is. But over the years, you pick that up and you almost know what they're going to say before it's said on any subject. And it's up to you to define what you think and read further on it and try to come up with something of your own on it.
One of the interesting things about slanted news is to watch the change that has happened in the last decade of the American press in relationship to Israel.
The shift of what?
The shift of the American press in relationship to Israel in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It was so 100% anti-Arab up until about 10 or 8 years ago, and now suddenly it's shifting another way. Now, I happen to say the shift is good, but that's just my private opinion and observation. But many other people say, well, now we're being pro-Arab only because of oil. Maybe we should have been pro-Arab a long time ago because there was some truth on both sides that you have to deal with. It's a very touchy, difficult situation when the word terrorist is used for one group of people and not used for another. That's manipulated news just in the way words are used. So that we have to watch that whole thing as to what's going on. So it's been rather interesting, and I like to support what David said, that, you know, that my Bible next to the Jerusalem Bible is the Christian Science Monitor, and I think it has some objective news, and it sure helps me understand the Toledo Blade a lot better, and I threw time away a number of years ago.
Marilyn?
I think we all tend to categorize writing in terms of nonfiction and fiction. Newspapers we think of as being nonfiction and fact. And I think that all writing is fiction in the sense that the person who's writing it comes to that news story or those events and those facts with certain values. And there's no way that a human being can divorce himself from their value system. And we need to be aware of that in even what we think is a straight news story. Even if we think the Christian Science Monitor gives it to us straight, perhaps it's only because we agree more with the values of the people who write those stories, and maybe some kind of a Christian perspective infiltrates that, I don't know. But a typical example might be the way Namibia has been reported in the past, say in the New York Times, where they will call the black guerrillas Marxist terrorists. And people in the American Lutheran Church who've been there, like Paul Wee, and come back, they say those people don't even know the definition of Marxist, and they're called Marxist terrorists. And that's just some of our culture's paranoia about communists that gets into our news stories, and we don't even think twice about some things like that. So I think that if we would read with the objectivity and the tenacity that this woman talks about, that that's really the key, and perhaps if we read the thing that we think we're going to disagree with most, we'd end up being the most informed. We'd have to think.
Mary, were you trying to get in a while ago, or are you just working with it?
I was going to say practically what Marilyn did too, adding that it seems to me that that if we possibly could, I mean, everybody subscribed to the Christian Science Monitor, and I pick and choose the newspapers that I like. The Columbus Dispatch in Columbus, Ohio, that's the worst paper I've ever read in my life.
Right. Who formed whose opinion on that?
There are most of my life. The Washington Post I like, but that's because I'm of that political bent, I'm sure. The Reader's Digest has nothing wrong with it, it's just what they don't put in it. So I think that's useless to read. So, if we could afford to have a couple of papers, one that we felt gave us straight facts, and then one that editorialized, knowing that it was slanted, like the Wenatchee World. You know, it's hardly except if you lived in Wenatchee and wanted to get some local news. It's just, I certainly wouldn't rely on the Wenatchee World for anything that had to do with worldwide things. But
and then wait 20 years and read a book, and then you'll find out the truth.
But does it seem to other people that television, you get more facts and less editorializing than newspapers, or is that just my...
No, it sure does. One of the things that television can do that the newspaper reporter Arnie was talking about was that when you see three or four people interviewed, just watch one time as to see, they don't balance it two and two. They usually balance it to go with their slant. So that you see three negative or three positives and one of the opposite side. And they can do that by interviewing 50 or 100 people and then select three out and or two out. And you think that's the balance. That's what the world has come is, 2-1 or 3-1 on this point of view.
That's kind of editorialized.
It sure is.
That's what I mean.
I think television editorializes more than the other because of television can editorialize in several ways. The lead story is already, that's what most people hear on Cronkite or NBC or whatever. They hear that. That's editorialized, what you put up. The newspaper, you at least got several choices of headlines.
But what I'm saying now is that those three major networks generally, if you flip back and forth, have the same lead story.
No, they don't.
Oh, I think they're very similar. I don't know. I can't really tell.
Well, is the new one at about the same time in all three of them?
No, we have three different hours that we can get the three stations. So I watch all three of them. I watch one at 5:30, one at 6, and one at 6:30. In Toledo, it just is lucky that we can do the three chains, the three networks on the same night without interfering. So when you flip back and forth, it might seem like they have the same. But we remark many a night how ABC and CBS and NBC have a completely different editorial point of view on what's important. Some even miss out on some of the ones that were number one on the one. Editorialized like mad.
What we got up here?
Art?
Well, I have a theory I'd like you to comment on. I suspect that much of it has to do with we as readers or viewers and the fact that the news media are economic enterprises as well as enterprises of communication, and that in one sense we're given what it is that we want. That is, it's too much work for most of us to read reports that cover all the angles, that present facts on all sides. It's much more fun to read the sensational or that thing which is in tune with our political or economic persuasion. And that many newspapers and television programs would fail economically because we would cease to support them if there were a careful and thorough balancing of news, and that therefore the real fault lies with us and our willingness to buy or to watch those things that are in accord with what we like to hear or like to read.
How many people have got their subscriptions to their larger newspapers in the last 5 years? One is economics, and the other is because you have everything on the TV that you don't even bother your head about it, unless it's just a local paper with a few ads in it and a few deaths in it. Otherwise, I know around 50% of people have dropped the Los Angeles Times in the last 5 years. Just don't need it. Just take the television done with it.
Well, I would hope that we're not naive enough into thinking that what we get on television is all the news, or even maybe they run a dozen stories in the evening. I would hope that we're not confident enough that those dozen stories are presented in their full and complete detail that we should be getting.
Well, like I say, your little local newspaper is what most of them take now, and they forget. I know so many of them that quit the Times all the way through and in our whole neighborhood all the way around. That used to be everybody, doesn't it? I don't think there's five Times delivered in our 135 mobile homes in our park right now. It used to be at least 50.
Are you getting the same coverage that you got before?
Yeah, same paper.
Well, no, I don't know because I don't live there, so...
I happen to get up in the morning and the guy used to throw the paper here, there, and all the way, and if you took a walk, well, you'd see where they're all laying, and there's none of them there anymore, and that's the end of it.
An interesting flower play is going on in the CBS system right now. Cronkite and some of the news people have been pushing for about 2 years because they want to get in-depth coverage on some things and not have it be editorialized as such, but fully... And they want to get an hour program on. But the local stations, of which I know a lot about, get much of their high income during their local news, and they don't want to lose that high generating income economically. And so although the system in New York would like to go along with Cronkite and give them an hour, they can't convince the people who are down on the local outlets to accept that. The local outlets are fighting it like mad. They don't want in-depth reporting, especially if it's going to cut into their economic income for that half hour. And it's, I think that gets into ethics, because Cronkite and some of the other people in New York are seeing an ethical problem about how can a minute and a half of the president's speech tell you much of what he says? How can 30 seconds of a Vietnamese boat people rescue by or somebody else tell you the story? It's no more than a headline and a vignette at the best. And so the ethics between Walter and New York says we need to at least get 4 minutes of this, or maybe you ought to have a 5 minute story occasionally and not just have Charles Carroll on the road give us a little 3 minute story. That's not necessary. It needs some fresh air, right, for moving on to the local news before you get all the murders in San Antonio or something thrown at you. But you see, the blood and the violence on the local news has people watching, and sponsors like to pay for that. So that's an ethical
thing. Plus, the viewer counts at the news time determines rates for the whole.
Right, exactly.
Is that right?
That's a good way of saying it.
I think one thing that we have to watch carefully as church members or Christians We read a news story, and it isn't written exactly the way we would like to have it to promote our particular cause, and so we feel that it hasn't done justice, that it's not an objective news story. Now, if the newsman hops onto something that we don't think is the lead, not that I want to argue with you, that's his prerogative. He's not going to give a cut and dried synopsis of what Arnie Mickelson or Fred Schutz or anybody else says. In fact, he may hear something out in the corridors that's maybe derogatory, and that's his story. And we're inclined to feel that that's atrocious or something like that. But you've got to give the guy some. Who is this fellow that died of lung cancer? Wrote the book Freedom and Dissent. He was on The Voice of America.
Merle.
Beg your pardon?
Merle.
Yeah, Edward R. Murrow. Now that guy, he's all right. He knows what it's all about.
I guess where I have a problem, Ed, is when I'm at the meeting and a reporter is at the same meeting, when I read the report in the paper, I don't recognize anything that went on there that he reports. Then I think his prerogative goes too far.
Well, of course, there ought to be a balance.
That's because you're the participant and he's the observer.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of our problem is that we're all human, and we like to read something that agrees with what we've got up here in our head, where our mind is set. We like to take a paper that slants the news to agree with our ideas, and so on and so forth, and therefore we tend to buy those kind of papers and read those things and give additional credence to those reporters rather than to give credence to reporters that may be talking opposite to what we've got in our mindset. And I think that's a large measure of our problem. The other is that we must remember that we're still human and that bad news sells newspapers. We always like to feel that we're a little luckier than the other fellow. And when we hear about some other fellow having some hard luck, it kind of makes us feel good because we didn't have that hard luck. And we're better off than he is. We may be a lot worse off than he is, but we still feel we're a little better off because look at the hard luck he had, and I didn't have that hard luck. So we like to read about this hard luck that this guy or that guy or that guy had. And that sells newspapers. And that's what's in the papers, is what will sell newspapers. The newspapers is a business, and they're in the business to sell papers. And the whole newspaper industry is slanted to make money by selling newspapers, by putting in the papers what will sell newspapers. And therefore, these nice stories about that you feel should be in the paper are not in the paper because we won't read them.
You have even in the church, there's what there's a viewpoint. I guess you'd be bored if I tell you a little story, but it might be very, very relevant to the American Lutheran Church. The Lutheran Standard reported at a convention that some action was taken that the administration, my dear friend, and now in need of our intercessory prayers, Fred Schutz, thought that this was hurtful because what happened is that this particular action violated the Galesburg Rule. Now, excuse me, I can't go into that. And so he called the editorial staff on the carpet, and he said, you shouldn't have put that in there. That leads people to think that we can do this. And we said, well, all we did was report what actually took place. Well, he got quite exercised about it. And so he took the case to the Board of Publication. And the Board of Publication upheld the editors that it was the administrator's viewpoint whose main task is to keep the peace of the church, and this was disturbing the peace of the church. And to put it radically, the main task even of church journalism, well, that's that's a little bit too strong to put as the main task. But one of our functions is to disturb the peace of the church. And he looked at it from the administrator's standpoint. We looked at it from the reporter's standpoint or the journalist's standpoint. And thank God we had a board that backed us up.
I think it's time to move over to Millet Center for those who wish to participate in the service of confession.